Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the New Mainstream Podcast, where we explore the impact of multicultural consumers on marketing and media. I'm your host, Mario Carrasco, and co-founder of Think Now. Excited for our guest today, Lucy Flores, CEO and co-founder of Luz Collective. Lucy, welcome. Please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about what you're doing at the Luz Collective.
Sure. Thanks for having me. And thanks for having this conversation. It's, it's such critical times. And unfortunately, conversations that we're not having all that often as it relates to the Latino, Latina, Latinx community. So I, as you mentioned, am the CEO and co-founder of the Luz Collective, which is a digital media brand. We center Latinas in our stories. Specifically, we cater to the Latina community. Latinas are the largest demographic of women of color in this country at just about 30 million. And when I first launched Luz Collective, we are new. It's only been about a year and a half or so. I did it because in the media landscape, there was just such a massive void. There was, our stories weren't being told, our faces weren't in mainstream media. And as a Latina myself, I just, you know, you were constantly searching for people who look like you, stories that were like your own, and it just wasn't there. So I decided to just go ahead and launch. And of course, that was a lot easier said than done. And it's been relatively successful. We've been growing enormously. We finally succeeded in raising some pre-seed venture capital about a year in, and it's just been a roller coaster for sure. But that's about the gist of what we do and what I do.
That's awesome, and congratulations on the raise. I didn't know about that.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, it was more of a friends and family type of situation, you know. So the way in which we did the raise, but it did come from the VC space, so. But that in and of itself, I did not realize when that happened that, you know, you start learning all of these new things that you just didn't, you were just, again, we were just so ignorant about, because we just don't often hear this information. But only 0.4% of venture capital funding goes to Latina startups out of the billions. Wow. That are given out every year. 0.4.
That's insane.
So, yeah.
And you know, prior to this, and you alluded to it, you know, why you started Luz Collective. Latina business owners were crushing it. I mean, what, in terms of opening business, I mean, can you share some of the numbers? I mean, on a high level, you know, how many businesses opened by Latina founders, and, you know, just kind of the importance of that Latinas play in the entrepreneurial community?
Yeah, and this is also a very largely underreported statistic and information about women of color generally, but Latinas specifically. Women of color generally were opening 8 out of every 10 new businesses. So, and people don't, I mean, that's an astronomical number, right? Out of every 10 businesses that were being opened in the last several years, about recently in the last 2 to 3 years, 8 of those are being opened by women of color. And specifically, Latinas now employ more than 600,000 people in this country from Latina-owned businesses. And we were opening businesses at rates comparable to Black women, which were at a rate that was significantly higher than all other ethnic groups and genders. So, I mean, in terms of our, excuse me, our entrepreneurial spirit, you know, the idea that we could go out on our own and we could build something, you know, that's very much just within our mindset. And so the growth of these businesses and the rate at which they were growing was on the uptrend. And so now that Corona and COVID crisis hit, it really is scary to see what kind of an effect ultimately that's going to have on all of these numbers, because so many of these businesses were also considered small businesses. In fact, a disproportionate amount of those businesses were still what we would consider micro businesses. So that's a whole nother layer that needs to be discussed.
Yeah, I mean, and putting those two points together that you mentioned in terms of 0.4% of venture capital funds going to women of color, Latino-owned businesses, and yet 8 out of 10, right, businesses started. Like, I feel like that disconnect, where you have a huge number of businesses being open that aren't, that don't have that cushion that many VC-backed businesses have, right, to withstand something like this.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, particularly when you have a large percentage of those businesses that were making $100,000 or less a year, where you have a relatively small number of those businesses that were grossing more than $1 million in revenue per year. And we've just historically had a very significant and very serious problem with people of color in general, and certainly Latino businesses, Latina and Latino businesses, having access to any kind of capital, not just venture capital, but typical, what we would consider normal everyday capital, like the Small Business Administration, financed loans, lines of credit, business loans from regular banks. We have always had a shortage of access to capital, no matter what kind of capital that is. And when you don't have access to that kind of capital in order to even first off launch your business, but then second, grow that, scale that in a way that makes you attractive to additional investment, then you do have a shorter runway. So many people are living paycheck to paycheck, and so many businesses are living month to month. On their payables and their receivables, and just trying to like really keep their businesses afloat. And then of course, on top of that, you add what we now have found is really disturbing data about the PPP loans, which were supposedly designed to help small businesses, truly small businesses, not the Shake Shacks of the world, right? But the small businesses who really needed that extra $20, $30, $40, $50,000, whatever it is, to get them through these next difficult months. And you find that over 90%, 91% to be exact, of Latino-owned businesses were shut out of that funding. So it really is like such a, I cannot overemphasize the destruction, like the full-on destruction that this is causing within Latina and Latino-owned businesses.
Yeah, I mean, I just had Barney Santos on the podcast, and we were talking about, you know, the restaurant industry, and of course here in LA, lots of restaurants, lots of food trucks, food cart, street vendors, Latino owned businesses, right? And I did not know the PPE number that you mentioned about, 90% being shut out. I mean, that's crazy frustrating. And when you look at it too, I mean, when you're talking about small businesses and micro businesses, I don't know the exact number, but I know that's a huge, if not the majority of people getting a paycheck from these smaller businesses. Right?
That's right.
So it's not only the Latina and Latino business owners, it's the people that they're employing, which is just, it's frustrating to hear.
Well, and from a female perspective, 64% of micro businesses are owned by women, Latinas, versus 36% that are owned by Latinos. And when you look back in terms of any kind of crisis that had a massive economic impact, whether it was the environmental crises like the wildfires in California, or other environment-related disasters, et cetera, the brunt of those economic disasters have always been borne disproportionately by women. And there's a lot of reasons for that, right? There's the pay gap. There's the, amongst people of color, it's the lack of preparation. It's the lack of wealth and our wealth accumulation. It's the lack of so many different economic indicators that our community has been shut out of historically over the years that then put us in a much more fragile position when something does happen for us to be able to successfully emerge from that crisis. And so when you have 64% of microbusiness owners that are Latina, then imagine the kind of devastation that's having on communities, on families, on, you know, some of the one or the two people that were employed by these folks. I mean, that's a job, you know. It might not be 1,000 jobs or 10,000 jobs, but that's a job that somebody had that they no longer have, plus a business that is no longer a family that is no longer able to care for themselves, simply because, again, they were not able to get access to a payroll loan that would have extended their trajectory for, you know, 60 days, 90 days, the time that they needed to get back on their feet.
Yeah, I mean, I know that there has been talk that there's going to be kind of a second round coming, and some of these issues that you mentioned were going to be addressed. I mean, I don't know much about the second round coming out and some of the funds being set aside for minority business owners. Have you heard anything on that? Or
I have seen some general reporting. I think one of the interesting things that I saw the other day was that apparently these conversations and mainstream news coverage on the very large businesses that were manipulating their relationships and taking advantage of loopholes within these programs, the public shaming of them is actually working to an extent. So, yeah. You know, the LA Lakers, for example, ended up taking a small business PPP loan, which they then ultimately ended up returning. So many of these very large multi-million dollar, sometimes I think billion potentially organizations, because they, you know, fell into the less than 500 employee loophole, but are still generating massive amounts of revenue, are applying at least from what we know, applying less, and many have chosen to give back their loans because of the public backlash. So I think what's happening now in the second round is also very important, is that there's just a lot more information and a lot more conversation about these programs. And it's not just the PPP loan, right? It's the economic recovery disaster loan. It's a regular SBA loan. It's all kinds of different things, which, by the way, these loans, if used for certain purposes, get converted into what is essentially grant money. They do not have to be paid back.
Right.
A large percentage of it doesn't have to be paid back. So it's just a lack of information, I think, that was the biggest issue. And also, again, you have to remember that particularly for Latinas that already suffer from, you know, just our own cultural issues, our lack of generational wealth, our lack of mentors, et cetera. You know, when we talk to Latino and Latina owned businesses and we ask, well, why have you not applied for a loan? A big percentage of those people say they literally self-decline. They say, well, I didn't think I'd be approved. And so they don't even try. Right. And it's not because they don't want to, it's because they don't even know where to start. And so a big problem with this is just having information, knowing where to get it, knowing even other business owners or hearing these kinds of conversations so that people can feel comfortable and feel, you know, at least somewhat confident in pursuing some of these different avenues that they might not have thought about before.
Yeah, and I think the big difference, right, in the second round is transparency, forced transparency, right? Now that they're having these conversations, now we understand how these funds are being allocated and how we get access to them. And I mean, so that being said, I mean, I'm an optimist as an entrepreneur. And one thing that I've been thinking about is that, you know, from a consumer perspective, that multicultural consumers, we're going to be leading the economic recovery, right? I mean, we see it now in terms of the essential workers, right?
Right.
Majority of essential workers being of color. I see when stay-at-home restrictions are start to be eased, we're going to see multicultural consumers coming back, you know, with that optimism. And from an entrepreneurial perspective, I feel like that resiliency that women of color, Latina business owners and entrepreneurs have are really going to lead the economic recovery. I feel like you have, you know, with Loose Collective, you have a really, you know, unique insight into that. I mean, how do you feel about that, that idea that Latina business owners are going to be leading the economic recovery, both from an entrepreneurial perspective, but also from a consumer perspective?
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously from the consumer perspective, it's much more difficult to gauge given, I mean, we've always, and it was always to me a double-edged sword when we talk about the purchasing power of the Latino community, because, you know, my thing was always like, we're more than your wallet, right? We're more yeah. than a community of spenders. We're more than, women who just buy stuff. And yes, while that is an enormous number that marketers and companies and everyone really should be paying attention to, and part of our battle was always, trying to convince these folks that they should invest in connecting with our community, because why would you not? Why would you leave money on the table like that? So it was a very frustrating conversation. And now that the economy has been decimated in the way that it has, and a recovery is still very much in flux, right? We don't entirely know what the short term and the long term is going to look like. Do we go into a full-on depression? Is it a recession? Is inflation going to rise through the roof with these continued stimulus? So, I mean, there's so much out there that I think it is hard to tell. But what is a constant for sure within our community is the resiliency. I mean, you hit that on the nail 100%, right? Latinos and Latinas will figure it out. We will figure it out. Right. Like all we need is like some duct tape and, you know, some wire, and we got it. Right. Like, we will figure this out.
I'll tell you kind of an anecdotal story. I mean, I live in the Valley. I live in the San Fernando Valley. And the corners that I typically saw like flower vendors, right. Where they're, you know, selling flowers and, you know, pick them up as you're getting off on the freeway exit. A couple of weeks ago, I saw, you know, the same vendor selling masks,
mm-hmm.
you know, selling That's the right. cloth masks. And I just thought that was such a great metaphor, right? For that resiliency. It's like, all right, well, you know, let me switch, let me pivot, right? As a That's business right. owner. And that just, that made me happy. And that gave me that sense, like seeing that in real life, like we're going to be all right, you know?
Yeah. And you know, on the entrepreneurial side, I think that's exactly the same. That's exactly the sentiment as well, is that I am very afraid at what's going to happen to so many businesses who will not be able to sustain this. They will not be able to weather this storm. But there are those who will figure out some other way. And there's others whose businesses might not survive, but they'll start again. They'll start again with some other thing. And that's definitely something. In fact, we've been doing a couple stories on exactly that topic, is how Latina business owners are starting to pivot and shift their business models and their approach. We actually just did a story on Latina creatives who had various products that they were selling, and they all immediately shifted into, and not only shifted into these masks and other things that were needed because it was a prudent business decision, but also that so many of them, despite falling on hard times themselves, were still donating a percentage of their funds to local communities and efforts and food banks and employment funds and you name it, right? Like it's such an incredible thing to see how these businesses not only pivot for themselves, but also pivot for their community.
And that's such a big differentiating factor. And I'm generalizing, of course, but just, I mean, in Latino-owned businesses, but also women-owned businesses, right? Like that sense of social impact.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, and it's certainly not any different than what we're doing. You know, when I launched Loose Collective, we are a mission-driven company. And we shifted as well when we realized that marketers were cutting their budgets and advertising was shifting into different forms of advertising. And, you know, organizations, we work a lot with social advocacy organizations by amplifying the work that they're doing and connecting their work and their services and their missions to our audience, to the Latina audience. They were shifting their funds also into direct assistance, you know, into a lot of these employment funds and assistance funds. So, you know, we ultimately knew that we had to then start focusing on other aspects of our business, whether it was, you know, influencer marketing or, you know, other types of elements of the type of services that we do with our partners. And but it was always with this mindset of how can we be helpful? How can we continue to ensure that our communities that most need this information, that are not hearing their stories told, that are not getting access to the latest information that they need, how can we make sure that we're talking about those things? And how can we make sure that we're also uplifting our community and creating content that makes them feel good, you know, and that just keeps their spirits high and, you know, and that people know that there's mental health resources out there available, you know, because it's not just about business. It's about all kinds of other aspects of our well-being and our existence and our health and our families, you know, so it always is with that in mind, is this sense of how can we continue to be helpful? How can we continue to uplift her?
Yeah, no, I love that. And I love the content you put out through Loose Collective, because, I mean, you hit something that's so important pre-pandemic and during it. I mean, mental health, right? I mean, something that's a whole other topic in terms of our community. And I feel like we were making strides as a community in terms of just talking about it being an issue, seeking out, you know, mental health services as a Latino, as a Latina. And so hopefully that continues, right? Hopefully this doesn't step it back. But if people want to follow you or follow Loose Collective, would you mind sharing your, you know, how we can find you on social media, website?
Oh, yeah, of course. So it's loosecollective.com. So www.loosecollective.com. You can find the stories that we produce, all original content on our site. You could find us on social media where we distribute that content and then also curate other content on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. It's all at the Loose Collective. And there's links all over our website, or you could just Google us. But yeah, we're, we're pretty easy to find.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on and having this important conversation, Lucy.
Of course. Thank you for having me. And I hope we get to do it again under better circumstances.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks everyone for listening. Thanks to everyone listening in. To get more multicultural insights, check us out at thinknow.com and follow us on social media. You can also subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform. Final thank you to our producer, Lucas Martinez, who created our intro music and makes our podcast sound great. To email him, reach out to martinez.lucas.a@gmail.com.